Showtime.
Blog Talk Radio.
Showtime, showtime. Evening, welcome. Well, yay, we got Fogs Bane and good old Bob here already. Tonight, we continue our celebration of the 116,000th birthday of Mr. Gale Gordon. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with
Dave Binkley from Weirdness Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and sitting in at least for a while he's still at the makeup table, we have
deep in me, in the chair of makeup, it is I, Guard the Gold. Wait, if you want.
Well, don't fall in too deep.
Yeah,
too late.
Yeah.
You got a show to do tonight at 8, right after we're done here.
Mm-hmm.
And we ain't going to be done until we play us some Gale Gordon.
Yeah, and some more fun. I just found his interview so educational, so fun yesterday. We've got more of that today. Mostly phone calls, though. We got people calling in and asking him questions and talking to him directly. Is it, what a gentleman.
Does anyone
yes,
ask him
know?
His favorite color? That's what I want to know.
No, I don't think so.
The heck's wrong with those people? The first question he asked. What's your favorite color?
It's magenta.
Mine's red. I love red.
Puce.
I've always loved
Puce.
Red. What the hell was that?
I don't know. It's a reddish.
Back when I sold shoes, we had a color. It was fuchsia. I think it's either green or pink. I forget.
Yeah. I think fuchsia is like a purplish red thing. I don't know. Sounds like it should be. I'm feeling mighty fuchsia today. And mauve.
Yeah.
Mauve. There's another.
Mauve. Yeah, we had mauve.
Mauve.
And taupe. T-A-U-P-E. Taupe. We had taupe.
Taupe.
Which
I think
is like
that's pronounced taupe. It's an earthy color.
Yeah,
isn't
it depends on what part of the country you're in.
Yep. We need CW here. I bet you she'd know all about this.
She would.
She would.
She has some taupe shoes.
Yep. Or something. Or maybe she'll top off the lesson.
Out.
I don't know.
Uh-oh.
Beach
is done.
Time to recharge. Time to recharge.
The bat signal.
Yeah, it was.
It's either that or Ultraman is running out of juice.
Yeah, that too. No, I think it's, yes, Commissioner, I'll be right there. That guy, yeah.
There you go. Something. Some electronic warning.
Yeah.
Let's hope it's not your pacemaker. But... lots of
gadget. Just call. That's what it was. Yeah.
A lot of radio tonight. Two more tales.
A whole lot of radio.
Two more tales with Gale Gordon. And as I alluded to last night, I was not aware that not only did he play Flash Gordon, but he's the first one to do so on radio.
First one?
Yeah. Yeah, and he talked about it in one of the interview sections. He said basically he was in New York, and so he tried it out against a lot of different people. Got to be the first one, then left after 8 or 10 episodes to go back to California.
Which
so that was strange, except maybe he was in New York trying out for a play, and he didn't get the play, so he went back to California. In the meantime, that would have been a nice afternoon job for him or evening job for him, you know.
I don't know.
Flash
he
Gordon.
Did a lot of work. We know he did a lot of work.
I tell you what, I looked over just what he did on Armis Brooks, Lucy's show, Here's Lucy, and Life with Lucy, the 13-episode one that came back that pretty much tanked. Anyway, just those four shows alone, he did 396, just shy of 400 episodes of television just right there. He did tons of other shows and stuff, but 396 episodes, that's more than some people have in television their entire career. And then think of all that he did basically from about 1935 to about 1955 on radio.
Yeah.
And, of course, he played a season of 44 episodes or so on Dennis the Menace when he what's his name passed away and he took over as the
Mr. Wilson,
his brother. Yeah, Mr. Wilson passed away and he took over as his brother. And I was thinking
I saw a lot of notations on some show called Speed Gibson, I think.
Well, yeah, that's right. He was, I think, a regular in Speed Gibson as well, yeah. That was radio, but yeah.
Found it real interesting, and certainly it made sense how he pointed out that the actors that could not transition from radio to TV generally didn't have stage experience. They didn't have that experience of being live and being seen.
It's funny. I was telling my wife that today. She was asking about the show and such, and I told her that was one thing. He said for him it was easy. He had the theater experience, but they didn't know how to walk and talk and move. But he'd done so much theater before he did it. And two jam, yeah. They just knew how to move in and out from the microphone when it was time for their parts. Not to say that there's not talent to that, because like he was saying, everybody had to have two, if not three, parts in a different in each production to give you an illusion of so many more people in the cast.
Yeah.
They probably made that illegal later, too. Yeah.
Well, thanks to guys like Mel. Well, thanks to guys like Mel Blanc too, where using multiple voices became, I mean, his bread and butter, and you know, and got himself to a position where he started getting screen credits before other voice actors did.
Well, yeah, that's because I think he wanted the screen credit, they wouldn't give it to him, so he said, "Fine, I'll go do other work." Where he went to Walter Lantz for a year. And
yeah, it could be Woody Woodpecker. No
Woody Woodpecker, right? And they said, "Okay, but you got to be exclusively with us for now." So he said, "Okay," but he got screen credit. And June Foray never got credit. Stan Freberg did a lot of the cartoons. He never got credit. Only one that ever got credit was Mel Blanc.
When you're that good, you can buck the system. When you are that good, because that's powerful. Look, what would Warner Brothers cartoons have been without him? Nowhere near as good. I mean, they needed all. Don't get me wrong; they needed all the elements. The artists were great. The music was great. Carl Stallings was amazing.
The writing was great.
The writing was great. But you need all the elements. It would be a lot different without folks like Mel Blanc and June Foray in our world. Eh?
But here's a curiosity. I know someone, and they're from Brazil, and they have seen the cartoons and animations that we've seen, but they've seen them with dubbed voices. And then they come here to America, and they hear the American voice of Mel Blanc instead of the Spanish person.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, my, look at the depth, the change, the character. Really comes
and out. I would bet in those versions from other countries, they use a lot more people to do the voices than just one, unlike Mel Blanc. It's almost like magic.
Eeny, meeny, chili beanie, the spirits are about to speak.
I am so glad I'm not to the point where that would matter, but yes.
Oh, I'm going to get you. I am so going to get you.
I'm probably going to hang up before that happens. But
full part of my evil plan.
Yes. No. In so some of the other countries, they have voice talent for their area or their continent or whatever for their viewing and productions. But how do you even get close to a Mel Blanc? I don't know.
You become June Foray. and that's about the end of the list.
Yeah.
Well, she did get credit in Bullwinkle.
Yeah.
Yes, she did.
She
I don't know.
She played what? She played Natasha and Rocket J. Squirrel.
We're going to hear another great cartoon / radio voice in our Gransby episode tonight. Granby.
We will. Yes, B. Benedict.
Oh, yeah.
I keep trying to throw an S in there. It's Granby, not Gransby. Granby.
Mm-hmm.
It's Grand B's, apostrophe S, yes. Interesting. And this particular one, when we air it, when we share it, it was actually the audition program. It actually ran longer than half an hour because it was the audition one, not the actual first episode, in a sense.
Because
it ran a little longer than the standard 30 minutes, and there were no commercials.
Who knew?
So a special treat here on Erie House. It's just like the Martin and Lewis show. They had an audition show with Bob Hope. And what happened is about three-quarters way through, Jerry Lewis decided he wanted to ad-lib with Bob Hope, and Bob Hope just tore them apart. And it went on way over what it would have been. So it was a live audience and all. The first episode actually had Lucille Ball in the same, and basically it was the same script with Lucille Ball, but they didn't go off on the tangent like, you know, Jerry Lewis thought that he would. And for like five episodes, especially the second episode, they talked about how Bob Hope shredded us, you know, and he did, you know. That'd be like trying to be like going against Groucho Marx in 1950, you know. No way.
Wouldn't happen.
Yep. Hey, before we start the one of the shows, Dale, why don't we take another of the calls that Gail Gordon took?
Why don't we, as we...
Why don't we?
Start off our little celebration for Gail Gordon. And here is another phone caller episode, a segment, rather, where Gail Gordon was taking phone calls.
Jim didn't want to wait. Okay, we'll go to Jim in Oak Brook Terrace. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I'd just like to say hello to Mr. Gordon. And
hello, Jim.
I think maybe a lot of your listeners, Chuck, I'm in my early 30s, so I grew up seeing Mr. Gordon on the Lucy Show and stuff, and then was more or less educated to his radio career through your broadcast. And it's interesting to me to listen to someone who's had such a long career and done so many things describing it. And I was wondering, as I was listening to it, you have a very distinctive voice. I mean, we're all used to what you look like on TV, Mr. Gordon, but I wonder if through your career you'd ever had an opportunity to do any voices for, like, animated cartoons.
No, I auditioned for Disney years ago, and I didn't get the part. That's probably why I didn't remember it. But I was born with a cleft palate, and it's only by the grace of God and a very wonderful operation performed when I was 18 months old in England that I could talk at all, because from the time that I was born until I was nearly 2 years old, I could only make very strange sounds because the roof of my mouth was split open at birth, and so I never had any therapy to speak of, except that my grandmother, bless her heart, was very insistent that as a young man, 5-6 years of age, that I speak very clearly and distinctly, which she would have insisted on anyway, and that's the only really real training that I had. So my voice is just by the grace of God, as I say, and some very wonderful care. Otherwise, I never took any singing lessons or anything like that. It just happens that my voice is, I guess, a little distinctive, and I'm very grateful for it.
Well, it's great that so many people found a use for it. It was great to get to talk to you.
Thank you, sir. Pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you. Gail, that must have been rather unusual to have that kind of an operation way back then. I wouldn't imagine too many operations like that were being performed at that
period of time. Well, they weren't. It was rather... an unusual thing, and my mother was English, and she happened to know of a doctor in England, a Dr. May, his name was, I don't know his first name, but my father and mother took me over to England when I was 18 months old, and they performed the operation there, and my sister was born over there a year or so later, but I was very, very lucky indeed.
Yes, he was, and what a strange path his life took and where he ended up.
Yep. His luck is our fortune, that's for sure.
Yep, and we're going to enrich ourselves some more of Gail Gordon in just a moment. We'll start off with Flash Gordon. I'm sorry, Gar, you wanted to say...
Yeah, I just wanted to say we still don't know what that guy's favorite color is.
Well, there's more. There's more to come. We might find that out yet. Stick
around.
We might find out.
We might find out.
Yeah.
All a bad dream.
All a bad dream, yes.
Anyway, let's get going with our first presentation. Death Battle Won by Flash. This is a one-parter for you tonight, and it's from?
Oh, gosh. I do have it. Do I have
a
it?
A long time ago, which...
May 18th, 1935.
Episode number 4.
I can't believe I had that near me.
Presenting the amazing interplanetary adventures of Flash Gordon. These thrilling adventures come to you as they are pictured each Sunday in the Comic Weekly, the world's greatest pictorial supplement of humor and adventure. The Comic Weekly, now printed in 32 tabloid-sized pages, each page in full four colors, is distributed everywhere as an integral part of your Hearst Sunday newspaper. For the benefit of those who may not have heard the earlier episodes, let us explain that Flash Gordon, the internationally famous American athlete, and Dale Arden, his beautiful American sweetheart, and Dr. Zarkov, the well-known scientist, were thrown onto the new planet Mongo when their experimental rocket ship crashed. After a series of adventures with the Emperor Ming the Merciless and his beautiful daughter Aura, who fell deeply in love with Flash, the two Americans, together with Dr. Zarkov, soon Prince of the Lion Men and Prince Baron, were sentenced to the prison city of the Hawkmen. There, the men were tortured, while King Voltan, mighty ruler of the Hawkmen, made plans to marry Dale. Flash and his companions escaped from the torture chambers, and Flash found Dale in time to save her from the marriage. But they were trapped by soldiers and again fell into Voltan's hands. Then there was a terrible rumbling sound. The floor started to tip, the walls began to crack open, and the lights went out. Now we continue the story. In the crumbling palace of Voltan, amid the shouts of the disorganized guards, Flash and Dale break away, but the mighty king flies into the air and, hurling himself on Flash, drags him to the floor and prepares to execute him by his own hand. Meanwhile, Dr. Zarkov and Prince Baron are rushing toward the throne room.
My scheme worked, Baron. Now to drive our bargain with Voltan if we are not too late.
With the light beams diffusing at the present rate, friend Zarkov, the city will remain in midair only for another half hour.
If Voltan will listen to us, there is enough time. But we must not waste a minute. Here we are at the throne room.
Look. Voltan has his sword at Flash Gordon's throat.
Stop! Stop! Wait!
Hey, who dares give me orders?
I do. I can save your city. But if you harm Flash Gordon, I'll doom this city and all of you Hawkmen to destruction.
But all my radium's gone. You destroyed that yourself. How can you save us?
Prince Baron and I have been experimenting with other atom rays.
Experimenting? Enough of this. I should have killed Flash Gordon but for your arrival and bluff. Now I shall finish the job.
Oh, bluff, my darling.
Be brave, Dale. This big windbag is bluffing now.
Bluffing, am I? I'll show you.
Listen to us, you fat fool. Your city will remain suspended only 20 minutes more. There is no time to waste.
What do you think you can do to save the city, you wizard?
We have found a way to make new light beams to hold the city safely suspended in the air.
What kind of trick is this?
It's no trick.
Then let us see what you propose to do. At once.
I will save your city on one condition.
You know when to drive a bargain, old wizard of the earth. Very well. Flash Gordon shall go free if you save my city.
You must also free Dale and Zarkov and Baron.
Absolutely.
Be quick, Voltan. The precious minutes are flying. Give us your answer.
I'll pardon you all if my city is saved.
Good. Then follow me.
Where are you going to take us?
Into this private elevator first.
Where are we going, Dr. Zarkov?
Baron and I discovered a room under the hall of atom furnaces, which had been stored with scientific apparatus. With the help of slaves, we constructed my newest invention, the Dindui Baron.
Yes, we did, friend Zarkov. I only hope this bull-headed monarch hasn't delayed us too long with this arguing. There isn't much time left to save the city.
We're tipping over. How much further do we have to descend?
We will be below the foundation in a moment.
What is this remarkable discovery, wizard of the earth?
You shall see, you shall see.
We're here. Hurry out, everyone. Hold fast to my hand, Dale.
Oh, Flash, do you think Dr. Zarkov will be able to save us?
I know he'll do his best.
There is my invention.
What is that mass of tubes and wires?
This electrical machine is an atomic light solidifier.
It will strengthen the beam?
Yes. Keep everybody back, Baron. I must have room to work.
Stand back, everybody.
Baron, do you think this machine will work?
Quiet. Professor Zarkov is throwing the switch.
What is that weird bluish light?
The new rays made by the atoms, Dale. Why, the city seems to be getting back on an even keel.
Right. Oh, so it is.
How is it working, friend Zarkov?
Splendid. So far, the light beams supporting the city are becoming stronger and stronger.
And the city is saved?
The city is saved.
Right. Oh, he's done it. All of you are free.
I say, you're crying.
I'm so happy we're saved.
Zarkov, come here.
Said he could do it, and he did.
Yes, King Vultan, you summon me?
Zarkov, you shall be my head scientist.
Vultan, this is more than I expect. I am grateful, deeply grateful, and appreciative of the honor.
Flash and Dale?
Yes, Impressive Majesty.
What is it, King Vultan?
As proof of our future friendship, I shall give you a royal wedding tomorrow. And tonight, we shall have a banquet to celebrate it.
Having a good time, Dale?
Wonderful time, Flash. It hardly seems possible that we should be married tomorrow. I don't dare believe it until we are actually being married.
You mustn't feel that way, Dale. It's just nerves.
Well, my friend, tomorrow will be the big day.
I'm not so sure.
Dale is just worrying about nothing, Baron.
It's almost tomorrow, Dale. What can happen now?
During the excitement of the threatened destruction of the city, the Princess Aura disappeared.
Oh, is that all that worries you? I should think you'd be glad she's not here. I am.
Well, lovebird, are you enjoying yourselves?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Impressive Majesty.
Majesty! Majesty!
Eh? What is it?
The air fleet of Ming the Merciless is approaching the city.
This means trouble.
What did I tell you? There'll be no wedding for us tomorrow.
We'll die fighting.
No, Vulcan. Let us take our chances on escaping. Give us a rocket ship.
No use, lad. They were damaged when the city tilted.
His Universal Majesty, Emperor of Mongol, King the Merciless.
And Princess Aura, now there will be trouble.
Steady, Dale, darling. There'll be a way out of this.
Greeting and welcome, Emperor Ming.
So, Vultan, you have become friends with the prisoners. Turn over this Earthman to my torturer, and to me, deliver my promised bride, Dale Arden. I command it.
No, Father. You promised Flash Gordon to me as my share of the spoils.
Hold, Ming. By the ancient laws of Mongo, by the sacred laws of the great Tao, who is all wise, I call for a tournament of death.
A tournament? And this fellow Flash Gordon would enter?
Yes.
Fine sport. A tournament. And all the planet will see him fail and die. So be it.
Between four mountains nestles a mammoth bowl-shaped arena, toward which most of Mongo pours in never-ending streams. It is the day of the start of the Tournament of Death, in which all of the contestants but one will meet death. And Flash Gordon is going to enter. He and Dale occupy seats of honor in Voltan's box. Princess Aura enters the arena on a golden throne carried by six blue dragon men.
Here comes Aura in all her glory.
Wild, treacherous, and cruel. But my boy, he's a beauty.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Here comes Ugrit, king of the lion men.
Dragon men are frightened by the lions. They've dropped the princess.
Oh, stay where you are, my boy. Prince Baron is already picking her up.
He seems to be smiling at him. I wonder...
Prince Baron, you have saved my life. Why did you do it after the way I treated you?
Because, my princess, you are a woman. A beautiful woman. And I can no longer deny the fact that I love you.
But whatever it is he's saying,
I wish he'd get interested in somebody else and leave you alone, Flash.
The tournament is about to begin, Flash. There's your horse. Here, take this sword, my boy. It's the one with which I became king of the Hawkmen. Take it and justify my faith in you.
And my faith, too.
Thanks, darling. And thank you, Bolton. I'll do my best. In another box, Prince Baron reaches a decision. Zarkov, I'm going to enter the tournament, win back my kingdom, and Ming's daughter, Princess Aura, for my bride.
Do not be a fool, Prince Baron. Why run the risk of being killed?
Wish me luck, my friend. I go to do battle. The battle royal with every horseman for himself. As the fight rages around him, Flash is beset by two yellow guardsmen. He vanquishes one, and as he is attacked by the other, he falls from his horse. Before the yellow man can drive home a death thrust, a masked fighter saves Flash, and the first great test of the Tournament of Death ends. A banquet is held for the survivors.
Are you sure you're all right, Flash?
Why, of course, I am.
If it hadn't been for that masked fighter, you would be dead now. Oh, why did you enter this horrible tournament?
To win freedom, a kingdom, and what's more important, you.
My dear. Look, the masked fighter is with Princess Aura.
The masked champion. Are you a criminal fearing arrest or a noble fearing recognition?
Blue blood or red, my lady. It will flow in the arena just as freely for your amusement.
Yes. Wear this scarf as a token, but do not stain it with your blood.
Fair lady, a kiss from your gorgeous lips, and I would face the legions of Tau.
Insolent one. I'll have you tortured.
Who can punish the living dead of the tournament? Goodbye, you beautiful devil. I go to fight for your hand.
That's Matt Champion. I swear I know his voice. The call has sounded. I must go back to the fight. Goodbye, Dale.
Goodbye, and good luck, my darling. Oh, King Wotan, when will this awful tourney end?
I know it seems horrible to you, little bird, but it is better that Flash should die honorably in the field of battle than at the hands of Ming's torturers. If he wins this final event, he will be a king. And you will be his queen.
The trumpets blow and the last contestants line up. Two by two, they mount the sky rope stretched over a flaming pool to joust with swords. And one after another, they are eliminated by death. Finally, only Flash Gordon and the masked champion are left. Flash loses his balance and falls down toward the flaming pool. But his hands catch hold of the rope and he hangs on. The masked champion, thrown off balance, also falls, but saves himself by grasping Flash Gordon's leg. His mask falls off, revealing Prince Baron. The crowd demands that both men shall live, and they are brought before Voltan and Ming the Merciless.
None of your trickery, Ming. Proclaim them both kings.
So be it. But I shall choose their kingdoms. To Prince Baron and my daughter Aura, I give the kingdom of the forest. To Flash Gordon and the Earth Girl, I give the kingdom of the cave.
You fiends, you know neither kingdom has been conquered.
True, Voltan, but these are brave men. Let them try. They can hold their weddings in their own kingdoms if they live that long.
What will happen to Flash Gordon when he attempts to rule over the unconquered kingdom of the caves? You'll know next week at the same time when he'll be back with another chapter of the amazing interplanetary adventures of Flash Gordon. And by the way, what is your favorite picture feature? Bringing up Father, Skippy, the Katzenjammer Kid, the Little King, Mickey Mouse? Or if you like thrills, then Ace Drummond or Jungle Jim, Radio Patrol or Red Barry. But no matter whatever your favorite, you'll find it next Sunday in the big 32-page comic weekly, along with Toots and Casper, Tilly the Toiler, Little Annie Rooney, Tim Tyler's Luck, and many others.
for the big 32-page comic weekly brings you each Sunday the funniest merrymakers and the most daring adventurers in the world of pictures. Be sure to get your copy of the Comic Weekly next Sunday with your Hearst Sunday newspaper. And listen for the amazing interplanetary adventures of Flash Gordon next week on this station.
I'm surprised this episode didn't have a double. Planetary adventures are the best kind. We finally got more cowbell. There you go. Christopher Walken would be pleased, Gar. Christopher Walken would be pleased.
Don't leave home without it. And a moral.
There's morals?
There's a moral!
Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Sometimes it's better to be betrothed than betrothed.
Okay, why not?
Oh. It was in there.
But that's only sometimes. That's only
that's
sometimes.
That's only sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes the other way around.
On months that have less than 29 days.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, in the case of Ming the Merciless and all his wively arrangements, it's probably better if they were detrothed than betrothed.
Probably, yeah.
A lot of versions of Flash Gordon. There's a number of comic adaptations in comic books.
Of
course, we had the movie that Queen did the soundtrack to. Flash.
Okay, well, what was the actor's name that portrayed Flash? You remember?
Nope.
His name Sam something?
Okay.
Jones?
Sure.
Sam
we'll
Jones.
We'll go with that. We'll go with that.
Never heard of the guy before or later.
Yeah. But as one could imagine, the character's grown and adapted over time.
But they had a great Ming the Merciless in
they
that.
Did. They did.
Yeah.
Oh, it was a renowned actor who played it in that, and it's eluding me who it was.
Can't remember.
Oh, Google, here we go.
Otto Preminger? No, I forgot. No. Ernest Borgnine? No, wasn't him.
It was. I think it was.
No, it definitely
wasn't. That would be the 1980 version. You're right. It's Sam Jones. Max von Sydow played Ming.
Yes, Max von Sydow. Yeah,
and then there was that 70s naughty version called Flesh Gordon. I don't think we need to discuss that much, but it was rather funny.
No, one of the great things about the Sam Jones Flash Gordon was they got a guy. I think his last name is Blessed, and he played the Eagle King or something. The Vulture. They had wings, and he was a big, huge guy. His last name is Blessed. And he was from English TV. Yeah, he was great. He was in Blackadder. I don't know if you ever saw those Rowan Atkinson Blackadder series from the UK.
No, I haven't, but I have seen that we've got a caller, Gar. Thanks, Colin Neary House. Welcome.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Flash. Music was done by Queen, of course.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
You ready for your cowbell there,
CW? We were asking questions earlier. We were asking color questions earlier, and we said if CW would hear, she would know.
Yes. Oh. We were talking about the wide variety of unusual colors, like in the old 64 crayon box, like like fuchsia and taupe and others.
Oh, and let's see. Well, naturally, of course, they had magenta, and they had the teal.
She was good in Rocky Horror. Sorry.
Right along with Columbia. There you are. And,
yep.
But yeah, they did have that. They had silver and gold, and the silver was really metallic.
Yes. It
and
almost
had,
looked like
really
it glittered,
metallic.
Did it not, as I recall?
I,
it
I
gold
forgot
and
about that, yeah.
Yes,
it
was
gold and bronze.
Gold.
Yeah.
Yep, silver, gold, and bronze, and they were really metallic and really glittery. And, of course, that was the three crayons that you used up more readily because you wanted
yes.
that glitter on
yes.
your coloring.
Yes.
Didn't you see the 120 box? 120? 120?
126, wasn't it? 123 or 126, something like that.
120, maybe 128? No, okay. Time to Google Crayola.
Yeah, okay. I think it was an odd number, yeah.
I thought the 64-bit box had a sharp a crayon sharpener in the back.
Yeah, so did the bigger one. Yeah, it had a built right in.
Very popular, you know, the coloring books now are very popular for adults, very zen and relaxing. So, you know, instead of reaching for that lucky strike, you reach for a Crayola.
Yeah, I know. I still can't color in the lines, though.
GW, here's your Zen. There you go.
Lucky strike. My gosh, those things didn't even have filters. Oh, my
no.
goodness.
I think Spike Jones was sponsored by him for a while.
Yeah, I'm not that bad. I at least have a filter on my light.
Lucky strike. They're toasted.
your lungs will be. After several years of use, your lungs will be toasted as well. Currently,
I'm
going to
bid you all goodbye. Have a great time, CW, Dale, Dave. Adios.
Wait a minute, Gar, you can't leave yet. There's one more thing that you need to know, and then on your way, sir.
The spirits are about to speak.
There we go. Put that in your makeup box.
The spirits are about to speak.
Thanks
all right,
for
you guys
joining
take care.
Us as always, brother. Break a leg.
Okay. Oh, I did. Darn you, it hurts. Bye-bye. Blah.
I hate when that happens.
Yeah, I tell you.
The workman's comp claims start coming, and I'm messed up now. Oh, I got to do paperwork.
Yeah.
Well, better you than me. Because all I got is a box of crayons now, you know. So
they don't like
working crayons.
I think Dave and I have had enough of injuries and other – well, I think all three of us have come to think of it over the last year.
Wow, yes.
Maybe wishing a broken leg is not a sign of luck.
Well, I don't know, at least you're not saying break a hip. Don't break a hip.
Well, if both my legs were prosthetic, then, you know, it wouldn't be a problem. I'd just, you know, get out a screwdriver or a whittling knife and take care of it, you know.
There you go. Welding kit.
Yeah. Welding kit. Yeah, break a bionic. There you are. Break a bionic.
Okay. All right. I got to go. Bye-bye. Blip, blip. Bye.
I actually did a Dr. Dave sketch once where Debbie took off of her prosthetic leg that she's had ever since she was, you know, was able to start walking. And I warned everybody before we shot. Now I said, I just want you to know this sketch was Debbie's idea. And I went on to give her extensive about, you know, we want to check things out to get a leg up on things. And she said, okay, here you go, doc. And she lifted her leg up and I didn't want to expect me to take it. And then, not funny, Debbie, or something like that.
No, nothing I found in my quick little search here tells us about when we were young, but currently Crayola's large box is 120 crayons. And I think they're still doing a 64 box. And miniature like 24 and 32 count crayons.
Yeah.
Glamour ooze in eight colors.
What happened to the Magic 8? There was a Magic 8 box.
And now it's Glamour Ooze.
Oh, okay. Some things just have to change.
Yeah. Now they sell markers, lots of markers. They sell watercolor.
Sharpies got big there for a while in various colors.
They made them waterproof. I mean, not waterproof, but washable. I guess a lot of people started saying, unless you're going to throw in a big pail of Sherwin-Williams, when the kid's done with the wall, you better start making them washable.
Well, that and color their face, and then you can't take them out in public for several weeks till you get the SOS pad and hear them screaming when you rub off seven layers of skin.
My wife's grandson did that with permanent markers, and it was it was fun. He thought it would just wash off, and little did he know it took a little bit more scrubbing than that.
Yeah, with a little Lux soap and a carbolic and some of that wonderful, wonderful Clorox bleach. Wow. Definitely will get that off your kid and everything else.
I like the organic decomposer stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, it takes off everything. Flesh. He didn't like it.
Speaking of Flash.
His kids.
Hey, we still got one more part of his interview, I think, before we...
I think we got a couple more phone calls.
But you're right, a couple more phone calls and one more part of the interview. I think it's one part of the interview we didn't use yet.
Correct. And, I thought maybe we'd save that for the end, or did we want to take care of that now?
Okay.
We can do it now.
No, that's good. We can do it. We can take another call. Let's take another call. Go ahead, caller.
All right. Calling Gail Gordon.
Stephanie, Hello? You're on the line with Gail Gordon.
Hi. I wondered if in the scenes you did with Lucy, did you do a lot of ad-libbing and changing the scenes, or do them mostly as they were written?
We never did any ad-libbing at all.
Uh-huh.
Everything was rehearsed. We knew exactly what lines were going to be because with the system of filming that she and Desi invented, which is three cameras, there were three cameras turning at all times when we were doing a scene. And they moved according to the dialogue that was spoken. A camera would have to move to get a shot of me, B camera would have to move to get a shot of her, and C camera would have to move to get a shot of both of us together or three or four other people. So there was never any ad-libbing. No, we knew exactly where we were going and what we were doing. We rehearsed for two of the 4 days of rehearsal with the cameras making the moves with us.
So during rehearsal, you didn't change the scenes or joke around, change the scenes either?
Pardon?
During the rehearsals, then, would you ever change the scenes or make any jokes that weren't expected or during the rehearsals?
Well, in rehearsals,
uh-huh.
we used to ad-lib
uh-huh.
And make jokes to break each other up, yes,
relieve
tension. But when it came down to the filming, we stuck exactly to the script as rehearsed.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. When you were doing those shows, that's really all in one. It's with exception of perhaps a break in the middle of the show. That was like doing a one-act play live in front of an audience, wasn't it?
Well, it was like doing a three-act play because we did them scene by scene
mm-hmm.
and in sequence, and there was very little pause between, unless it meant a big change in costume or makeup for Lucy, for instance, or for any one of
mm-hmm.
us. If we got... fell in a vat of chocolate or something, then you have to get cleaned up and dressed up for the next scene. But the whole play was done from beginning to end in front of an audience, and they waited in the gaps between setups, and somebody would entertain them. Gary Morton, Lucy's husband, would go and entertain the people to keep them happy while the changes were being made or makeup was being changed. But they saw the audience there saw the whole show as the people at home saw it finally when it was all put together.
And they saw it in order then, in the exact sequence of order. Okay.
A little insight on the production of I Love Lucy.
Yeah.
The Lucy Show.
Yeah,
I,
so much fun.
I kind of expected his answer to that because I've always heard that Lucy was very, very smart, very structured, very orderly, and very demanding.
Oh, yeah.
She worked hard, but she expected everybody else to keep up with her.
Oh, absolutely. I think, yeah, it's on YouTube. Here's Lucy. And because this particular Here's Lucy isn't protected as well as I Love Lucy, they'll hold the rights to that until it falls into public domain by sheer law, because it's just too classic. But Here's Lucy was produced in different structuring, so some of the episodes have leaked out, and they really don't, I guess, give a rip about it. But anyway, the episode with...
I think a lot of those are CW, are public domain for whatever reason, but CBS was part owner of I Love Lucy, and they're the ones that never let go.
Yeah. I don't know if the family still gets any rights to it. I'm sure they must, but yeah. But, I can't wait till the very second it falls in the public domain. People are going to pounce on it like a bunch of hungry jackals. Hot dog, it's free.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But anyway, I was saying that on Here's Lucy, Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor did that episode in regards to that famous ring Richard Burton bought Elizabeth Taylor, you know, the size of a boulder. And he did not like Lucille Ball in the sense that, as you said, she was very demanding. But in his mind, he had more experience than her, albeit it's true on stage and in movies he did. But television was her gambit. That was her realm of expertise. And supposedly there were some salty words said.
Yeah, she would definitely be able to stand her ground. The one thing she hated the most was actually having to do production decisions. And because after the divorce and eventually Desi let go, even though Desi, he directed the first season of, was it the Lucy Show? That was the first one right after. I think he directed that first season because she wanted him to. And they were divorced. They could work together. They just couldn't live together, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, it's cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. And
there's that.
Of course, you know, if it hadn't been for her, we wouldn't have Star Trek and all of its multi Crayola 152 combinations.
True.
Yeah.
And she must have really, really, really liked Gail Gordon to work with him so often in so many different shows.
No doubt.
He would have been the original Fred Mertz had Lucy had her way, but Gail was locked into other things. So, hey, Dale, this does run a little bit longer than 30 minutes. So we
let's get going here with Grandy's Green Acres. And why does this one say audition, Dave?
Well, it's because it may not have even been aired. It was the audition program, and it ran longer than 30 minutes because it wasn't intended to be aired.
Ah.
But guess what? We're airing it.
A nice radio rarity from the mind of Dave Binkley. And here's part one of Granby's Green Acres audition show.
Granby's Green Acres. Starring Gail Gordon as John Granby. B. Benaderet as his wife, Martha. Shirley Mitchell is daughter Janice. And Polly Bayer is Eb, the hired hand.
Oh, hello there. I didn't see you for a minute. I was busy writing a story for next week's issue of the Doveville Clarion. I'm Dave Winslow, editor of the Clarion. Doveville is a nice little community. Got a healthy climate. It's 2.5 inches above sea level. We got a church, a firehouse, a school, and a railroad station. Someday, we hope to get a railroad. Well, anyway, this story I'm writing is a human interest feature called Man with a Bee in His Bonnet. It's about a city fella named John Granby.
Martha?
Yes, John?
Worked in a bank in the city and had one of them real banking kind of minds.
Martha, I've just been going over our household accounts.
John, you've just finished eating dinner. Let it digest.
Martha, do you realize that last month you spent $56 more than I made?
Oh, I don't see how that could be, John. Every time I made out a check, I entered it in the checkbook. It came out exactly even.
Even?
Well, yes. At the end of the month, there was one stub for every check.
What am I going to do with you? We plan a budget and you promise me faithfully that you'll stick to it. But you just ignore the budget and spend more and more money. Martha, how can you be such a Democrat?
John, I do my best, but prices are so high.
Martha, let's face it. The price of food wouldn't be any problem to us if we'd done what I wanted to do 5 years ago and bought a farm. Why, now we'd be getting all our food for nothing.
John Granby, I can't understand you. You've got a good position, a home, a wife and a daughter, but you're always talking about throwing everything away to buy a farm.
But, honey, that's all I've ever dreamed about. Oh, I'm not denying that now I've got security, but I want more than that. I want to prove that I can make something of myself with my own hands, that I can succeed starting with nothing, just my brain.
What?
I mean, I can start with my brain, which is nothing. That is... My brain is something, but
John,
I thought I could
no.
start with...
What are you trying to say?
That I want to have the feeling of accomplishing something. On a farm, I'd have that feeling. I'd take a seed, a tiny little seed, and I'd plant it in the ground. Then I'd cover it up with dirt, and then I'd water it. And pretty soon, what would I have?
A dirty little wet seed.
Martha, don't you understand? A farm would give me independence. If I need an apple, I can pick it. Or if I want a potato, I can dig it. Or if I want an egg...
You can lay it.
I can lay it. Oh, of course not. This is ridiculous. Simply ridiculous.
What's ridiculous, Dad?
Oh, Janice, I want to ask you a question.
Okay, Dad.
Remember, I want you to think very carefully before you give me an answer.
Okay.
What do you think of the idea of our moving to a farm?
I think it's ridiculous, stupid, and impractical.
Janice, when I want your opinion, I'll ask you.
Now, let's not have any arguing. Now, John, you read your paper, and Janice and I will do the dinner dishes.
Oh, well, I did them already, Mom.
Oh, well, thank you, dear.
That's okay. Say, Mom, what kind of meat was that we had? I never tasted anything like it.
Oh, that wasn't meat.
It wasn't? Tasted just like it?
Uh-uh. It was a rutabaga burger.
A rutabaga burger?
Uh-huh. I found the recipe in the ladies' home journal.
Oh, sounds more like something you'd find in Popular Mechanics.
Well, dear, I told you prices today are just impossible.
Oh, they sure are. How much did you say steak was the last time you bought it?
$1.27 a pound.
$1.27 a pound? Why, I wouldn't pay that for meat if they sliced it off Betty Grable. Prices like that are just ridiculous.
Well, if you think that's ridiculous, butter is 93 cents a pound. Sometimes it's been a dollar.
Oh, I can't believe it. After all, what is butter? Just milk that's been pushed too far?
You know, Mom, maybe Dad is right. Maybe you ought to let him buy a farm.
Now, Janice, your father and I have already settled that.
Oh, I was just kidding.
Well, it's nothing to kid about. I think it's a wonderful idea.
No, John.
But, Martha, if you'd only
John,
let me buy
the... I refuse to argue the point anymore. If you feel that you've got to plant something, buy yourself a flower pot.
A power flot? Flower pot? I'm talking about something bigger.
Then buy a window box.
A window box? Well, what's so funny?
I thought you were going to say window box.
Why should I say window box?
Well, you said power flot.
Oh, well, that was a mistake. Now, where was I?
Talking about a window box.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, maybe I will buy a window box. Well, all right. I'll show you that even when it comes to small-scale cultivation, you can save money. Now, that ought to convince you.
John, you've been talking this way for years. What is it that makes you so anxious to be a farmer?
Oh, I don't know. I guess that it's just like they say. When you gotta grow, you gotta grow.
Well, by now I guess you know why I call this here story in the Clarion, Man with a Bee in His Bonnet. Mr. Granby is the bee, and the bee he's got is the farming bee. The only trouble was that every time he tried to stick his head out of the hive, Mrs. Granby sprayed him with DDT. Of course, that didn't kill the bee. It just took a little of the buzz out of his stinger. A window box ain't a farm, but then half a loaf is better than none.
Good day, sir. What can I do for you?
Do you carry window boxes?
Well, certainly. If they're not too heavy.
I beg your pardon?
It was a little joke. Yes, sir, we have about as fine an assortment of window boxes as you'll find in any garden supply store in the city.
Good, I'll take one.
All right. Now, will there be anything else?
Yes, I'd like some dirt for it.
Dirt? Well, I guess we can dig some up for you.
What kind do you have?
Well, it's brown. And it's got, well, when you shovel it up, brown. And well, it looks like, it's dirt.
Oh, but there are all different kinds. You see, I'm interested in farming, and I've done a great deal of reading about soil.
How fascinating.
Yes. The pH of the soil has a great deal to do with how well a plant will grow.
Really?
pH is a chemical term which indicates whether the soil is too acid or too alkaline.
Well, I don't know what ours is, but I'll be glad to let you taste some.
That won't be necessary. I'll test it when I get it home, and then if it's too acid, I can always alkalize it.
What do? Give each plant an Alka-Seltzer?
No, you don't do anything like that.
Well, I should hope not. That fizzing might drive a geranium out of its mind.
Well, I'm not going to plant flowers, you see, only vegetables. Which reminds me, I'd better buy some seeds.
Certainly. What kind do you want?
I told you, vegetable.
I know, but what kind of vegetables?
Oh, well, I don't know. I haven't got too much room. Say, How about picking out one seed of each?
One seed of each?
Yes, yes. What would you suggest?
You wouldn't do it anyway.
Wait here, I'll go back and pick them up.
Well, sir, Mr. Granby took his winderbox home and went to work planting his midget garden. About 2 months later...
Say, Mom, it's getting late. Aren't you going to cook dinner tonight?
No, dear, your father's cooking it.
Dad? Oh, I hope we survive.
No!
I hope he survives. That's about the fifth time he's burned himself.
What's the occasion?
It's harvest time. Your father picked all the vegetables in his window box today, and he insisted on cooking them himself.
Oh, no.
Come and get it.
We're coming, dear.
Come along, Janice.
All right.
Well, it's all finished. Now, sit down, sit down, sit down.
Thank you, dear. Would you like me to serve?
No, I'll do it in a moment. But first, I want to point something out. These two casseroles contain the results of my first vegetable crop. The total cost was approximately 4 cents a pound, which is 10 cents cheaper than they can be bought in any market. I hope I've proved my point.
Well, you certainly have, dear.
Good for you, Dad.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, Martha, if you'll pass your plates, I'll begin serving.
Oh, here they are, John.
There's Janice's.
Thank you.
Yours, dear.
Thank you.
Now mine. There. I hope you two feel as good about this as I do, because it kind of makes us all members of the farming fraternity. This is the kind of meal that millions of farm families sit down to every night.
I can't believe it.
You can't believe what?
That so many people can live on 2 peas and a string bean.
Well, with the harvest over, Mr. Granby settled down to the normal routine of his business at the bank.
Hello, dear.
Oh, John, where have you been all day? I called the bank and they said you were out.
Well, I told you last night I had to go up to Doveville on business. Saw Mr. Parker about making a collection on his note. I went out to his farm.
Oh, did everything work out for you?
Oh, of course, of course. Although that Parker was a pretty shrewd article. When I got to his place and told him I was from the bank, he wouldn't let me in. Turned his police dog loose on me.
Oh, my.
But I wasn't going to let any mutt frighten me off. I looked him right in the eye and walked past him. I showed him who was the master.
Yes. Well, dear, sit down. You must be tired.
No, it hurts less if I stand. Well, I finally got Parker to let me in the house. I didn't waste any time. Parker, I said to him, you owe the City National Bank some money, and unless you pay, we're going to take over your farm. He finally saw the light.
And he paid you the money?
No, I bought the farm.
You are listening to Granby's Green Acres, starring Gail Gordon.
And you're listening to Erie House Radio, starring Dave Binkley, CW, and co-featuring Dale Kay. And Guy the Ghoul.
Who's not here? Yes, he's working on getting ready for his show that happens in about 25-plus minutes here, so...
Oh, yeah, and Gar, while you're getting your makeup on, there's something else that we wanted you to know about Gail Gordon.
Yes.
Yeah, so listen very, very carefully, because it's kind of secretive.
Eeny, meeny, chili beanie, the spirits are about to speak.
Wow. Last week he almost had a makeup. Last week he almost had a makeup malfunction listening to.
Just for reference, the maximum box to date at current that I can find is 152 varieties of color for the Crayola box. And some of their colors are asparagus, fuzzy wuzzy, piggy pink, bedazzled blue.
And what was the pink? Okay.
Piggy pink. Not Miss Piggy Pink, just Piggy Pink. And you have Deep Space Sparkle. You have, Antique Brass. You have Atomic Tangerine. You have Black Glitter, Blast Off Bronze. So they have more glittering and sparkling ones now, but they have 152.
152 wow. flavors
exactly.
for the kids who eat
trans. Yep, and the box also has its own sharpener in there as well. So that's 152 flavors to run to the ER to have extracted from your offspring.
That's right.
Yep. But they are non-toxic, so if your child should happen to eat that, don't panic. Sit down and join them.
That takes the sport out of it.
You know, it's so hard to replace those individual colors too. You know, when you get that many in there, you just can't get hard to get individual replacements. I tried calling the company once; they wouldn't do it.
Nope. Again, it's all or nothing. They're very,
yeah.
very stingy.
Damn you, Crayola! Damn you!
Yeah. Curse you!
There's a lot to our remaining portion, so let's get to Granby's Green Acres and pray that we have time to close out with the continuation of the audition of Granby.
You are listening to Granby's Green Acres, starring Gail Gordon. Now here is part two.
Granby finally did it. He quit his job at the bank and bought a farm near our town of Doveville. That was about one of the biggest news stories I printed in the Clarion in a long while. About a month later, he and his family set out for the new house.
Ah, what a day! What a day! Well, Martha, we'll soon be there. Stop that crying. You've been doing it ever since we left.
Oh, now, Dad, don't nag Mom. She feels terrible. After all, she's just left a home she's lived in for 20 years. She's left her friends, everything.
Well, so have I, and I'm not crying. I'm happy. See, Martha, I'm laughing. Ha-ha! Goodness sake.
Oh, Dad, how could you do a thing like this?
How could I do a thing like this? You and your mother talked me into it. Prices are too high, you said. On a farm, we'd get free butter and vegetables, you said.
Dad, we didn't mean you had to run right out and buy a farm. Why, you never even let Mother or me see it.
Well, I wanted it to be a surprise.
Oh, some surprise. How do we know what kind of a place you bought? Why, it might even be like this one we're coming through down the road. Look at that old broken-down house. It's overrun with weeds. The barn is sagging. It needs paint. And look at that... Dad? Why are you stopping here? Is there something wrong with the car?
No, Janice.
Dad, do you mean...
Welcome home!
Dad,
Just let me unlock the front door. Have a minute here. There. Well, Martha, shall I carry you over the threshold? That's funny. She did the same thing on our honeymoon. Look, Martha. Cheer up. It's going to be all right. Now, come on. Let's have a smile. That's it. Now, let me get my handkerchief and wipe away those tears. There we are. Now, blow. Martha! Oh, that was just the bus going down the road.
Boy, giving up your job, putting most of our savings into this place. Well, I guess it'll work out.
Why, of course it will. Now, come on, let me show you around. Now, I go through here. Now, this is the kitchen.
Oh, my, it's large.
Sure. So wait till our furniture gets here. Won't it look swell with the refrigerator over there, the electric stove over there, the dishwasher there.
Dad, do you mind if I ask you a question?
Why, of course not. Go right ahead.
Where are the electrical outlets?
The electrical outlets? Why, they're, well, they should, well, they're usually,
John, there aren't any outlets. And I don't see any lights either.
No electricity? Well, preposterous. How did Mr. Parker shave?
Dad, this may come as a surprise to you, but there are a lot of homes in this country that don't have electricity.
Well, what about Hoover Dam? And vice versa.
There doesn't seem to be any gas, either. How am I going to do the cooking?
Well, I don't know. I'll see. Oh, so there are no electrical outlets, eh? What's this hole down here near the baseboard? Just let me put my hand in there and
Dad, what happened? Did you get a shock?
No, a mouse bit me.
A mouse? Oh!
Oh, Dad! Mother fainted!
Okay, there's a pump outside. I'll get some. Oh, water. Oh, here's the pump. What's the matter with this darn thing?
Hello? Need some help?
No.
Appears to me like you do.
Will you please leave me alone? My wife has fainted. I need some water.
You ain't going to get any from that pump.
Why not?
She needs priming.
Well, what do I prime it with?
Water.
How can I prime it with water if I haven't got any water?
Get some.
Where?
There's a pump 3 miles down the road.
Oh, well, I'll get in my car and drive right down there.
It ain't worth it.
Why not?
That pump needs priming, too.
Well, where can I get the water to prime that pump to get the water to prime this pump?
6 miles down the road.
Are you sure that pump doesn't need priming, too?
Yeah.
What makes you so positive?
It's a well.
Look, this is an emergency. I've got to get some water for my...
I'll get it for you.
Yeah, oh. Oh, well, that's very neighborly of you, Mr.
Name's Eb.
Eb,
yeah. Used to work on this place for old man Parker. You need a hard hand?
No, I don't. No.
Okay, I'll get the water anyway.
Well, thanks. I'll appreciate it.
Dad, Mother's come too.
Oh, thank goodness. I'd better go in and see her.
Well, I don't think I would just now. Give her a little while to cool off.
But, Janet...
Now, look, if you want to do something, why don't you see if you can find us some sort of a stove to cook on?
All right, dear, yes. Stove. Now, where can I get a stove?
Here's your water.
Oh, thanks very much. Wait a second. I thought you said the well was 6 miles down the road.
It is.
Then how did you get the water so quickly?
I had it in my car.
In your car? Why didn't you say so?
You didn't ask me.
Oh!
Well, I guess I'll be going. You sure you don't need no hard man?
I'm positive. I'm perfectly able. Wait a minute. Didn't you say you used to work for old man Parker?
Yeah.
Say, what did he use to cook with?
A stove.
I assumed that, but what kind?
Wood burner.
Well, do you know where I could get one?
I think Parker left his old one down behind the barn.
He did? Great. Say, would you give me a hand getting it into the house?
You still don't want to hire me?
No.
For a man who ain't hard, I sure am doing a lot of work.
And so Mr. Granby settled down into the routine of farm life. And one morning, weeks later...
John, wake up.
What? What's the matter?
The rooster is crowing.
Well, turn it off.
John, will you please get up? It's 4:30.
4:30? What's the matter with you, Martha? I don't have to get to the bank till 9.
You don't work in a bank anymore. You own a farm, remember? Now get up.
All right. Oh, I could have slept if it hadn't been for that darn rooster.
Shut up!
I never seem to get enough.
John, what's the matter?
My pants are cold.
On. Eb is waiting for you to help him with the milking.
Oh, that Eb is some hired man. I hired him to help me, and I end up helping him.
John, will you please hurry?
I am. Let me wash up.
Well, there's water in the pitcher. Just pour it into the bowl.
Okay. Oh, Don.
What's the matter? Can't you find the washcloth?
I've got the washcloth, but where's the ice pick?
John, will you...
I'm going.
Morning, Mr. Granby.
Good morning.
Sleep well?
What I did of it, yes. Come on, Eb, let's get going.
Rag mop.
Eb, do you have to be so cheerful?
Well, I feel good. It's going to be a beautiful day.
How can you tell? The moon is still out. Oh, here's the barn.
Your boss is waiting for us. You want to try milking her this morning, Mr. Granby?
Well, of course. Of course, how am I going to learn if I don't try? Whoa. Let me see. Put my hands here.
A little further forward.
I know. I pull down like this. She's empty.
No. She ain't empty. You ain't doing it right. Here, let me show you. So, bossy. So. All right, now watch me. When you pull down, you move your fingers like this.
Uh-huh.
see?
Show off.
Now you try.
Okay, okay. I don't think she likes me.
Of course she does. Now just keep at it.
All right, all right.
Gently, gently. You ain't pulling taffy.
I'm being as gentle as I can.
Whoa! Go on, try her again.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm getting the hang of it. You get it, Em? I'm milking the cow and I said I'm getting the hang of it?
Just keep milking.
Martha, 4 gallons again today.
Oh, that's fine, dear. Put it down over there, Dad.
Yeah. Yeah, this is what you wanted, Martha. Milk to make your own butter. Free. Say, I'm hungry. Is there anything in the icebox?
Yes. 200 pounds of butter.
What?
Dad, can't you sell this milk somewhere?
Well, I've tried to, but the dairy won't buy milk from you unless you have a special kind of cow barn. And that costs $8,000.
Oh, dear.
Dad, Mother and I have been talking, and we think you should put this place up for sale.
You're not serious.
Well, Dad, you're just not cut out to be a farmer.
But I haven't had a real chance to try it. I haven't even planted a crop yet.
Dad, look, I've been talking to Eb. He says the land on this farm has been overworked. The soil needs care. It'll take too much time and money.
Oh, what does Eb know about farming?
Well, he's lived on one all his life.
Yeah? Well, I've got booklets from the Department of Agriculture. Now, look, I'll make you a sporting proposition. You say nothing can grow on this farm. Well, I'll bet you that I can plant a crop and harvest it. If that fails, I'm willing to admit that I was wrong and sell it.
Oh, Dad, you're just...
Now, wait a moment, Janice. I'll take that bet, John.
But, Mother...
Janice, it's what your father wants.
But, Mom, you...
Janice, I'm surprised at you. Has your father ever let us down?
Well, no,
Of course he hasn't. And I don't think he will now. All his life, he's had his heart set on owning a farm. If the worst comes to the worst, we can always go back to the city and he can get a job. But first, I think we should give him a few months to make good.
And so Mr. Granby went to work to prove to his wife and daughter that he could make a go of the farm. Morning, noon, and night, he worked in the fields, hoeing, milking, shoveling, pumping, raking, and inside of a month, single-handed, he got the following result.
It's a badly sprained back, Mrs. Granby. You'll have to stay in bed for 6 weeks.
Stayed flat on his back for almost 2 months. Eb tended to things for him, and then came the day he could get up and look at his crop.
Martha, will you please get me my shoes? I left them downstairs.
All right, dear.
Oh, boy, this is the day. Just wait till you see that field I planted. I'll show you if I'm a farmer or not.
Yes, dear.
Well, get my shoes!
All right. How's Dad?
He's yelling again, so he must be better. He wants to go down and see the field he planted.
Mom, does he know?
No. I couldn't bear to tell him while he was in bed suffering that way.
Nothing grew. Not even a weed.
Eb said he did his best, but... Oh, Janice, I just don't know what this disappointment will do to your father.
Well, Mom, if something did grow in that field, you know what it would mean. We'd be stuck here on this farm.
Well, yes, but I wouldn't mind, just as long as your father was happy. Somehow I've got a lot of confidence in him. I think he can make a go of this farm.
Mom, listen. Can you stall him for a half hour?
Well, I think so, dear, but why?
I've got to get to that vegetable store in town. Stall him as long as you can.
Martha, can't you walk any faster?
Oh, yes, dear, but I'm worried about your back.
Well, never mind my back. If I didn't know you better, I'd think you were trying to stall.
Why, John, why should I do that?
I don't know. Where's Janice?
Well, I think she went down to the field to meet us. Oh, yes, there she is. Janice!
Hello. Dad, I came down
Janice,
here to...
Janice, will you get out of my way? I can't... Martha, look! There are things growing! Growing things! They're growing! Growing! Growing things! They are! They're growing!
Yes, dear.
And you two said that this land wasn't any good. But I told you I'd make things grow. I told you!
Oh, you sure did,
yes,
Dad.
Just look at that field. Little green things sticking their heads above the ground. I've got to pick one.
Oh, John, be careful of your back.
Look, Martha, a carrot. It's amazing. Simply amazing.
Why is it amazing? You planted a seed, covered it with dirt, watered it, and pretty soon, what do you get? A carrot.
Well, that's what's so amazing about it. This is where I planted tomatoes.
There we go with great Granby's Green Acres. Golly gosh.
Fun little show. Fun little show.
Yep. Curly Bear, B. Dennis,
so
and Gail Gordon.
So what's happening next week on Erie House Radio, Dale?
I don't know. Ooh, back to horror. With fighting demons. Yep, we're fighting not our inner demons, but Inner Sanctum, Hall of Fantasy, and Casey Crime Photographer. That's Friday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. And then Saturday at 6:30 Eastern, we got Sherlock Holmes and Arch Obler Plays. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. I can feel the shivers now.
Yummy.
Yep,
all kinds of...
We'll be...
Oh, and hello to
all kinds of demons.
Conserva... Conservina, who's in the chat?
Conservative Nation Media, whoever that is, welcome.
Oh.
Thanks for joining us today. Perhaps another blog talker, who knows? But we thank you for joining us. As we share these old-time radio plays and facts and fun.
And good old Bob and Fogsbane, and thanks for coming by as our regulars and just such joining us in such little festivities as Gail Gordon's birthday this weekend.
And we'll see you Friday at 8:30. Thanks again, folks, for joining us live here on Erie House Radio or if you're listening in the archives. See you next weekend. Good luck in prison.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her too.
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
That one was almost perfect. We missed the puff.
Yeah. Looks perfect on mine, but my timing Yeah.
Better timing.
Well, since we won't be using it, I wonder if in our extra party stuff here, we should play a little bit more of the Gail Gordon stuff or not, Dale?
That's kind of up to everybody else. I don't care. I'm fine with that.
Would
you like to hear a wonderful Fibber McGee story, a short one, CW?
Sure. I would indeed, positively.
So as a bonus for folks listening in the archive and, well, for ourselves, here's Gail Gordon with his interview, and this is about Fibber McGee. So there'll be a clip from Fibber McGee as well.
You've really provided us with so many wonderful hours on both radio and television. Besides Lucy on TV and besides Mr. Conklin's role on the radio and TV versions of Our Miss Brooks, you also stepped in a role on the Dennis the Menace program, didn't you?
Yes. Yes, Joe Kearns, who was a very old friend of mine, worked in radio with me in many, many, many shows, passed away very suddenly, and they called me, and I went in and played his brother and sort of took his place and kept the show going for an extra couple of seasons, yes.
So you were also a Mr. Wilson then on that program.
Right, yes, I played his brother, Mr. Wilson, and moved into his house when he passed away very suddenly, yeah.
Now, you and Bob Sweeney had a show on television, too,
yes,
didn't you?
Yes, the brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. Yes, that was a lot of fun to do. And Sweeney is a great, great director and a very imaginative fellow. It was a little ahead of its time, I think, but we had much fun doing it, yes.
Now, I was watching a rerun of an old Make Room for Daddy, Danny Thomas show.
Yes.
Not too long ago, and there you turn up as the building superintendent.
Yeah. I was Mr. Heckendorn was the name of the character. I was on it for quite a number of shows, yes. That was fun, too.
Of all of the things that you've done, can you pick out anything specific that you like the best?
No, nothing really special except working with Lucy was a joy, but also working with Eve Arden was.
Mm-hmm.
I've been very, very lucky, and the people that I've worked with have all been very inspiring people, very, very capable and talented, and very nice people. And I consider that one of the greatest glories of this profession, is having known so many people who were real people, really good people, as well as being talented and delightful.
Now, you worked for many years with Jim and Marion Jordan as Fibber McGee and Molly.
Yes.
And you were Mayor LaTrivia on that show, and also for a time you were Foggy Williams, the weatherman.
Yes, for a couple of episodes, yes.
Was that because the LaTrivia character was kind of a takeoff on Mayor LaGuardia, and then when LaGuardia died, they didn't want to use that character?
No. I appeared on the show with Jim and Marion as a one-shot. I played her ex-boyfriend who was coming to town, and I'd become very successful, and Jim and Marion got Gildersleeve to act as a butler. They were trying to put on the dog to impress me because I was a rich man and had been very successful. And I did that as a one-shot, and they liked me, and I got along very, very well with them. And Don Quinn came up with the idea of Foggy Williams, the weatherman, as a rather quick second show, or third, that I did with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they decided they'd like to have me in as a regular, and Don said, well, you know, Wistful Vista has never had a mayor, so he created the part of LaTrivia for me. It's the only part that was ever written for me right from scratch, and that's how I became Mayor LaTrivia.
The reason is that... Come in.
Oh, hello there, Mr. Mayor.
Oh, hi, LaTrivia. What goes?
I beg your pardon?
What's pretty in the city? What fries with the guy? What do you know that ain't so?
Don't be so slangy, McGee. What he means, Mr. Mayor, is what's cooking.
Oh. Oh, I see. I'm afraid I'm not quite up on the modern idiom.
Who's a modern idiom? Now you look here.
Now, just a minute. Just a minute, please. I just wanted to be sure you were familiar with the route of the parade.
Well, I think we are, but maybe you better run over it again to make sure, Mr. Mayor, if you have time.
I'll take time. Though I have been so busy making my belt buckle speech at different places, I haven't been able to devote much thought to this parade.
What you mean, belt buckle speech, Latrivia?
About our war effort, McGee. I talk to people in offices and factories and schools. I tell them that if we expect our boys to belt those Japs over there, we have to buckle down and work over here.
Good.
The whole purpose of my talks, of course, is to make people realize that this war won't be won simply by giving up two golf balls, a new inner tube, and a teaspoonful of sugar. This thing involves everything we have and everything we are. It's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And by George, if a nation of freedom-loving mechanical geniuses can't smack the kimonos off a gang of little thieves who couldn't invent a dollar watch on their own, we're not the people I think we are, and I think we are. Excuse me, I didn't mean to make a speech here. Now, about the route of this parade. We start at 14th and Oak Street.
And go east?
No, we go west, young man. We go west to Maple, then 10 blocks south to McKinley.
I thought we went south to Adams.
No, McKinley. Then east to Washington, north to Monroe.
Don't you mean Madison?
No, Monroe.
How can we go north to Monroe? It's an east and west street.
My goodness, is it? Yes, it is. I don't know what... Oh, but I merely said we go north to Monroe, not on it.
Oh, then we don't go on Monroe.
No. Yes, you do, too. North on Washington to Monroe. And then...
Well, I still don't know how we can go north on an east and west street.
Well, for that matter, if we go west on Adams, which is a north and south street, we'll wind up on an east and west street, which will be Washington going east. And it's a one-way street going west. How do you explain that, Latrivia?
I didn't say we went west on Adams. I said Washington was... I mean, if the parade goes north to Monroe... I mean, Adams... Now, wait a minute. If we go east on Madison...
You mean south.
South on Madison... No, east on Madison. Then west to...
Quincy.
West to Quincy. Oh, wait a minute. No. Who said anything about Quincy?
Molly did just now.
Well, we don't go to Quincy. Quincy is way down on the south side.
Well, how on earth did we get clear down there? No. If we go south on Monroe...
We don't go south on Monroe. We go west on Monroe. I mean east. No, I mean south. I mean, if we take Washington to Adams, we... Take it anywhere you want to. And don't bring it back!
There's a little bit of fog. With Gail Adams, Gail Gordon being really his perfect character. Frustrated, aggravated, a little haughty, but a lot of fun.
That was good.
Yeah.
That was very good.
Yeah.
And Mike Mace is definitely not a fan of this.
What's that?
Medium.
What's that? I missed.
Hmm? He just sent me a message.
Oh, yeah?
Not wow.
A fan of Gail Gordon?
Yeah. No. He's not a fan of Blog Talk.
Oh, yes, he's not. Oh, he couldn't log in again tonight, huh? Well, you know,
yeah.
when you make your email, Mike hates blogtalkradio dot or at gmail.com, you know, it might not cooperate with you too much.
Yeah, I don't know why that happened. It happened to Gar too. I don't know how he fought his way through,
yeah.
But he got in. Gar got his original sign in back in somehow, some way.
He probably because they got so confused by conversing back and forth with him, they said, please, we can let this make this all go away if we give him his name back.
I gave him an inside. I think I'll do the same for Mike, although I think he pretty much is done with Blog Talk. I'll see if I can give him a name, to, an actual humanoid to reach into.
Oh, my.
What are you going to do?
Well, that was a nice extra special treat, that little extra Super McGee.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was, they always, That's the one time when Fibber and Molly tag teamed up on people. And it was only on Mayor La Trivia, because he was just so easy to fluster and frustrate. So it was just I think that was some of my favorite parts of all the people came through. Bill Thompson as the old timer, and Bill Thompson as Wallace Wimple, who was always fun. And Doc Gamble, he and Doc Gamble went at it, but Molly never joined in on that particular thing. But I think my favorite thing is with Fibber McGee, where Gail Gordon and Jim Jordan heading off to, and of course Molly joining in with Jim.
I'm trying to think of which cartoon character seems to have been modeled after Wimple. With Sweetie Puss. Was it Droopy Dog?
Droopy Dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, Droopy Dog, and Bill Thompson did the voice for that as well. Yeah.
Ah.
Oh, my gosh, really?
Yeah, same kind of
thing.
There
was one that it may have either been somebody impersonating him, but it was an early 70s cartoon about fish. And I think that was Bill Thompson as well. I'd have to check that out on IMDb, but
we'll have to look that up.
But yeah, he was Droopy Dog and probably some other voices as well. He was a nice mimic when they needed somebody to impersonate somebody, a voice. He was the one that usually came through. Just like on Jack Benny, if they needed an impersonator, it was Dennis Day that would take on that voice. I know that he did Winston Churchill and some other. Many other voices. Dennis Day did.
Odd hearing Dennis Day.
Wasn't Jabberjaw? Wasn't Jabberjaw, was it?
It wasn't Jabberjaw, no. It was what about...
One of the fish in Aquaman?
I'm an easy... No. It was... let me get... Bill Thompson.
There we go. Research being done.
There we go. He was in Lady and the Tramp. Let's see. Animal Follies. That wasn't it. The Magical World of Disney. No, he was. He was Scrooge McDuck in '67.
Really?
For Scrooge McDuck and Money. It was a short in 1967.
Surprising.
He was also Ranger. He was also Ranger J. Audubon Woodlore. I remember him,
yes.
As that. How the West Was Lost, he was the old-timer. He was Toot, Whistle, Plunk, and Boom, he was Professor Owl. Hanna-Barbera cartoon series. He was Touche Turtle.
Really?
In Touche, yeah, he was Touche Turtle.
Those were fun.
Hmm.
I don't see the series I was thinking of, though.
The only thing I can think about underwater would be Flipper, Aquaman, and Jabberjaw.
Apparently it was somebody doing him.
Maybe.
But yeah, all the droopies
Nemo?
Are in there. No.
Finding Nemo came much later. Thompson might have been gone by then.
Yeah, he was going. I'm sure he was. Let me see. What did it say?
He might have been
1971. He lived till 71. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, he was in the 1953 Disney Peter Pan as well, and 1959 Sleeping Beauty. And was married to Mary Margaret McBride.
Mary Martin McBride.
They were introduced by Ernest Borgnine.
Could have been. A guy was everywhere.
He was. Yep.
Outstanding. Well, gentlemen, I must be away. If I could possibly get our one and only best friend to say adieu, if that would be agreeable.
Agreeable it is.
Absolutely.
If you wish to invite the gentleman to the piano.
Yes. Mr. Durante, the ivories are waiting for you to tickle them away.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
So your ivories tickle.
It's time to say good night.
Good night. for this say but good night.
Okay.
We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and it could think a do. Good night.
Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Ooh.